You're listening to Rabble Radio, the flagship podcast of Rabble.ca. Hey there, and no, I'm not your regular host, Chelsea Nash. I'm just subbing in for poor, sore-throated Chelsea. I'm Wayne McPhail, a former host of Rabble Radio back in its distant early days when Facebook was, well, a way for Mark Zuckerberg and his college bros to meet girls. But these days, a much bigger Facebook is dominating the news. Under fire from regulators and lawmakers over its business practices, Mark Zuckerberg announced that Facebook is planning to rebrand itself and will be giving itself a new name that's going to have something to do with the metaverse. Oh, great. Critics argue that the renaming is just a distraction from the controversies Facebook has found itself in, not the least of which are centered in Canada. In a press conference Monday, Charlie Angus, MP for Timmins James Bay, called on Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's government to implement a multifaceted plan to regulate social media giants like Facebook. The social media company also owns global social media platforms Instagram and WhatsApp. National politics reporter Steve Wenzel spoke to Michael Geis this week for Rabble.ca as part of his report on Facebook regulation in Canada. Geis is a law professor at the University of Ottawa, where he holds the Canada Research Chair in Internet and E-commerce Law. He's also the author of the 2015 book Law, Privacy, and Surveillance in Canada in the Post-Snowden Era. Here's that interview.
So Facebook's an essential service for so many people. It's, you know, a private corporation, but it serves the public in so many ways by getting into currency and things like that. I'm wondering how governments, NGOs, and international organizations are supposed to manage this type of evolving entity.
That's a big question to start. I mean, I think the answer varies depending on who it is that we're talking about. There's clearly a role for regulation and what government can do to try to address some of the issues. The concerns for companies or organizations, I think, varies pretty broadly depending on their sector and the kind of engagement that they have. And for the individual public, there's quite clearly differences as well. So, you know, I'm happy to get into specifics as you see fit, but I guess I would say that in some ways, part of the problem I think that we have had around this discourse, and no disrespect intended, comes from that kind of question. Not that there's anything wrong with asking. A lot of people are asking exactly that question, but there's oftentimes an attempt to lump everything together. You know, it's like, what do we do about Facebook? And or what do we do even more broadly? We've had from the heritage minister, you know, what do we do about web giants? Or this is what I want to do about web giants. And that lack of kind of granularity around the kind of companies that we're talking about, the different sorts of services they're talking about, and the way that they affect different players often means that we target the symptoms of issues rather than the larger structural challenges that we might face. And those will vary depending on the kinds of depending on the company.
The more I delve into the subject, the more I realize how multifaceted it is. I guess what I would lead into would be the act of illicit data harvesting is well documented. It's a well documented issue with social media platforms like Facebook. I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit to how personal data is playing a key role in the subject of regulation.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, because it does seem to me that, well, I guess there's two things. It does seem to me as a start that much of the attention has been on essentially on content regulation, which I think is frankly misplaced as the place where we've put a lot of our attention, because that is, I think, indicative of a symptom as opposed to as a structural issue. I think we would be far better off when dealing with companies like Facebook, focusing on data, and whether our data rules are up to the challenge of addressing these issues, dealing with anti-competitive related kinds of concerns, dealing with effective enforcement around ensuring accountability for organizations. And we haven't, I don't think, paid enough attention to that, or at least the shiny object has often been, you know, hate or misinformation or some of these other kinds of issues. And, you know, obviously we'd like to see those dealt with effectively. I think we would do better addressing structural problems as opposed to looking to government to either censor or establish or entities that require takedown requirements. I also think that, you know, implicit in your question was not implicit. You directly said that it's illicit data collection. I think part of the problem is that we don't know enough about oftentimes the data collection that takes place. You know, obviously the companies will argue and do argue that they are compliant with Canadian privacy rules. That then begs the question, are Canadian privacy rules up to the challenge of addressing these issues? Perhaps, you know, if that's true, then perhaps the problem lies with Canadian privacy rules not being sufficiently robust to deal with activities that many people would say ought to at a minimum be regulated and further constrained. If they are engaged in unlawful or, you know, privacy or data privacy violations, then we need to think about, one, why don't we have more transparency and visibility on that? And secondly, why don't we have better enforcement around that? And I guess I would sort of sum it up by saying, I think there are a lot of questions remain about these issues. I think that there for many, and I think that many times there may well be activities that are frankly lawful, but there is a lack of sophistication or awareness on the part of everyday users who simply unaware of the amount of data that gets collected, the amount that even that they do willingly and openly make available, and they're not fully cognizant of the implications of doing that.
I'm wondering a little bit too about how, because Facebook has become kind of a multinational organization of sorts, how can countries like Canada create regulation when a lot of Facebook's logistics are bound to the United States where it operates?
Yeah, it's an important question. Listen, I think that question is a question we've been asking ourselves. And we're not just us, many countries have been asking ourselves for literally two decades around internet and internet regulation, right? So, how can we ensure that Canadian laws are enforced? I think that the experience suggests that there is at once both more and less power than we might otherwise think. There is more power in the sense that, you know, large global corporations, by and large, want to comply with the law. They're public companies. They face liability if they don't. And I don't think there are many companies that are actively trying to violate the law. They are actively trying to work aggressively within the law in many instances. And that's true not just in tech. That's true in every area. So I do think that laws can be enforced. In fact, Canada was the home to the very first Facebook investigation and finding coming out of a privacy commissioner many, many years ago. We were the first to do that. So I do think there is scope to act. At the same time, I think our experience would suggest that there is pressure to be broadly consistent with some of the global standards, that there is while there is room for policy innovation, there are some limits to how much policy innovation you can realistically engage in and still expect that, and do that without feeling, I guess, you know, the paying certain costs for making policy choices that may go beyond some of those standards. So we've seen this, you know, it applies perhaps a little less in Facebook, but more in the broader internet innovation system, where if you establish rules that are just wholly inconsistent with what is found in some other jurisdictions, and there are some real costs associated with that, then you may well find many companies simply saying that they're going to block Canadian users because it's just not worth their while to enter the marketplace. Some might say, well, that's just fine, but reduced consumer choice, less competition in some areas may not be, for many others, maybe not viewed as a net benefit. Maybe there's a real cost to be paid, in other words.
in the last couple of weeks, Facebook's been back in the limelight after the whistleblowers came forward, both on 60 Minutes and recently on CNN. I'm wondering what your takeaways were from their insights into the operations within Facebook.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people are deeply, understandably, deeply troubled by what we've seen come out and the reports of what that company's engaged in. I don't know that a ton of it is a total shock. You know, I think there's been a fair amount of reporting and a sense that this has been taking place for some time. I think it does reemphasize the need to ensure that to develop laws that are effective and to think even more about the enforcement challenge that we face. Not you raised the jurisdictional one or geographic one of how does a somewhat smaller country ensure that its rules are respected. I actually think that we're in an environment where you can make the case that even the largest players are finding that their rules aren't necessarily respected or that they're finding it a challenge, right? You know, and, you know, if we reach the point that huge penalties are still just viewed as a cost of doing business, then we're going to have to re-examine the sorts of penalties that are associated with some of these rules. I also think, and again, it comes back to addressing structural challenges as opposed to symptoms. You know, I think the emphasis that we saw from Frances Haugen, for example, has really been on things like transparency and accountability. And, you know, we need more transparency around algorithmic choices. The argument being that Facebook's incentives for those algorithms are largely commercial without much regard for some of the broader implications that they may have, and that we need that kind of transparency to at least understand that and then be in a better position to take action. I do think it's a concern that the proposals we've seen so far from the Canadian government don't move in that direction. They're content largely to treat these companies either as an ATM so that they want just let's cash in on the potential revenue and look at these companies as a potential revenue source for policies and programs as opposed to, you know, potentially activities or actions that are better constrained. So either it's viewing them as a source of cash, or it's seeking largely to regulate the content on these sites. And I think that too is a mistake. You know, I think that Haugen is really pointing us in the right direction, which is to focus more on transparency and accountability with these companies, as opposed to the mess that I think we've seen so far from the Canadian government, whether that's looking at these companies from a broadcast perspective, from a media perspective, or from an online harms perspective.
Now, recently, the New York Times reported that Facebook's considering forming a type of legislative body known as an election commission to advise on election-related matters. I think that really goes to show, when you look at what Facebook was in its Harvard days, to what it really speaks to what it's become. I'm wondering how you feel about a private company feeling the need to create a legislative body.
Yeah, I mean, I think Facebook faces a lot of pressure from governments on these issues, and as do, frankly, many of these players. It seems to me that they were taken, well, I don't know, some were not surprised, but there may have been some corporate executives that at least underappreciated the ability for their platforms to be manipulated in the context of an election. And I think there have been efforts to try to address those issues. And from a Canadian perspective, you know, so far there isn't a lot of evidence of, let's say, foreign manipulation on our platforms, you know. And I think actually what we have seen, which is of course the specifics that we Canada established around the advertising transparency database, you know, I think has frankly worked fairly well. You know, it's been an underreported issue from a media perspective, but I've been working with a student taking a look at, frankly, some of the data. And frankly, the government, it's the Liberal Party that far outspends any other parties in terms of Facebook spending, ad spending during the campaign. And so, there is a certain irony here that the same government that would seek to paint the company, paint that company in particular as being evil, was heavily reliant on it for the purposes of being reelected. Yeah, the data I saw wasn't even close. They spent, I could be wrong, but my recollection is they spent almost as much as the other parties, the other three parties combined.
That's remarkable. And it really speaks to the how Facebook is so interconnected to parts of our life and work and business and et cetera. I guess this is leading me into likely my final question for you. A recent article in The Atlantic called Facebook the largest autocracy on earth. I found that quite fascinating. I'm wondering what your response to that would be.
Well, I think, you know, listen, I think we over the years have gone through, over decades, gone through periods where there are companies that have enormous power, and there have been efforts to try to rein some of that in. It's obviously a powerful company, less because of the financial side, although quite clearly it is a very profitable company, though not the most profitable, but very profitable, but more because having a company with 2.8 billion users or somewhere in that range is, you know, that may be what is unprecedented. And the scale is really unimaginable for almost any policymaker. It's unimaginable largely for individual governments, because it's just so much, it is in that sense so much larger than any individual government. But it also points to the fact, I think, that the problems and the solutions themselves are just so much more complex than some of the prior issues that we faced. You know, so if there were an easy solution to address this issue, we would have done it. We would have done it a long time ago. And the truth is there isn't. And, you know, these on almost every issue, it gets complicated very quickly. I mean, we're talking about the fact that the same government that would like to paint itself as being a potentially powerful regulator was also heavily reliant on that company during the election campaign, far more than the opposition. I mean, it's not clear why that is, but they spent much more than anybody else did. So it's pretty clear that just about any data-driven organization sees the value there. I mean, that's why the company's been successful. But it is, there's no question, there's a big, this represents a big challenge. And, you know, in fairness, it is at least worth acknowledging that despite all the controversies that have arisen and the concerns from many in the privacy community and in other communities, people still use the service. And it's pretty clear that many still believe they derive real value from it. And so that represents a challenge too. I mean, the option isn't just to stop this, you know, full stop, because there are a lot of people that do rely on it, and there is good that comes out of some of these services. The challenge is, how can we create a structure that, you know, allows us to maintain, I think, some of the benefits that come from this, but is a more serious attempt at dealing with some of the harms. And we've clearly struggled so far to either identify the solutions or come up with the political will, or even in the political realm, at least so far in Canada, move beyond facile solutions that in many instances may cause more harm than good. I mean, it's striking that the proposals that the government has put forward for online harms has been roundly criticized by international organizations as raising significant human rights related issues, with the risk that Canada becomes a model for true autocratic countries who say, hey, you know, if the Canadians are doing it, why shouldn't we?
And I guess as Parliament is about to be back in session soon, I'm wondering if you have any suggestions or recommendations on where they could, you know, where they could take some baby steps. Where could they take some swift action to start getting some accountability here?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it starts with, you know, I've pointed to three issues typically as sort of as low hanging fruit before you get into some of the stuff. One has been tax, but that's largely been solved. Actually, we've got GST. There's now an international agreement on taxation. I think actually the tax issue's largely been taken off the board. The other is the data privacy, data governance related issue. And it was discouraging that the government in the last parliament introduced both a sort of content regulation bill, Bill C-10 around broadcast, and the privacy bill C-11 within a couple of weeks of each other. And the Bill C-11, the privacy bill, went nowhere. And to me, that is and should remain the priority when we're starting to think about sort of regulation in this space. And then I also think we need a more aggressive competition bureau. You know, one of the ways that the US has, you know, has moved towards some amount of accountability, let's say in the privacy realm, is through rules that say, you know, we may not have universal privacy law, let's say, in the United States, but we do require companies to abide by whatever promises they make, and they face liability where they fail to do that. I would love to see us borrow a page from that when it comes to sort of accountability of these companies and move towards saying, listen, we're still working out potentially some of the boundaries here, although obviously illegal activity is illegal activity and there's a full expectation that you move forward. But we want to see algorithmic transparency, which we should be doing now, and we want to see accountability for the commitments that you make with real liability where you fail to meet it. So if you take the position that you're going to deal with some sort of unlawful content and seek to ensure that this isn't promoted, or that you are not going to use your algorithms to fuel anger in the public or other kinds of things by, you know, in the kind of Haugen revelations, well, then how about some liability where you don't live up to those standards? And to me, if we did all of those kinds of things, that would go a long way to addressing some of these issues. The transparency piece works. And in fact, the Canadian online ad experience in the political realm is a good example of how trying to build in some transparency has the effect, I think, both of politicians potentially thinking twice about this sort of stuff, but even more third parties. The kind of manipulative ads largely disappear because you've got to disclose all of that to the public. And, you know, those work much better when you can be surreptitious about it. When it's open, it largely goes away.
That was Michael Geist, Canada Research Chair in Internet and E-commerce Law. He spoke to us from Ottawa. And now the segment we call In Case You Missed It, the stories we think matter most on good old rabble.ca this week. Joyce Nelson writes that Amazon and Google are planning to expand data centers in Montreal and in Toronto. But, she says, if the tech giants don't renounce militarism and cancel Israel's Project Nimbus, they may find significant pushback in both of those cities. In fact, workers from both companies have come together to condemn the project, defying their corporate bosses. Project Nimbus is a cloud-based technology that could provide AI-assisted surveillance tools to the Israeli military and government. Still on tech, Penny Combe writes about truck platooning, one truck driver leading a conga line of autonomous vehicles across Canada's highways. If that sounds like a train on asphalt, that's pretty much the idea. But perhaps rail is more efficient, and maybe only the biggest trucking companies will be able to afford the new cyber conga tech, she says. Meanwhile, in Alberta, our prolific contributor, David Klingmanhaga, writes that this week the beloved and outgoing Calgary mayor, Naheed Nenshi, fired a couple of well-aimed shots at the UCP's favored candidate to replace him at City Hall, Jeremy Farkas. When you vote, Naheed said, I hope you will do so with optimism and joy, with hope for a better future. And that, presumably, adds Klingmanhaga, does not mean handing the city back to a puppet of the sprawl cabal of developers who have bankrolled the Manning Center's past efforts to run Nenshi out of Calgary City Hall. Our man on the Hill, Carl Nuremberg, opines that Alberta Premier Jason Kenney wants revenge against the rest of Canada for disrespecting his province's oil and gas. Nuremberg says that the premier has decided to take a swipe at federal equalization payments and is gaslighting his fellow citizens in the process. Meanwhile, in another column this week, Clemen Hager writes that the probability is high that Kenny and his inner circle lack the humility to learn from the lesson taught by Monday's municipal election in the province's two largest cities. The vote saw progressive mayors and councils elected in both cities, including Gaudi Gondek, who is the first woman mayor of Calgary. Now to Indigenous and environmental activism. Brent Patterson told us that as carbon emissions increase, Indigenous land defenders opposed to fossil fuel megaprojects have continued to be criminalized, despite commitments made at the COP21 summit in Paris in December 2015. He calls on Trudeau to end the criminalization of frontline defenders and water protectors opposed to the extractive megaprojects that are accelerating the climate crisis. Meanwhile, Doreen Nicol calls on Trudeau to do the right thing, honor Jordan River Anderson's life and the lives of all First Nation children by supporting what's called the Jordan's Principle. Anderson was a 2-year-old Indigenous child prevented from living with his family during a fatal illness because the federal and Manitoba governments were in dispute over who should cover the cost of his care. The principle would see the jurisdiction of first contact assume medical costs until legal issues can be sorted out. And finally, David Suzuki says you should literally leave well enough alone and let tree debris stay on your lawn, you raking maniac. It saves you the trouble and, he says, helps out pollinators like butterflies whose chrysalises hide in the duff and tree debris. Who knew? And that's it for this episode of Rabble Radio. Got feedback on the show? Great. Send it along to editor@rabble.ca. Chelsea would love to hear from you. She reads everything you send her way, good human that she is. And you'll find lots more at rabble.ca to read. Until next time, stay informed, stay active, and to paraphrase Pink Floyd, hey, raker, leave those leaves alone.